Vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin appeared in her first primetime interview last night since being named the GOP vice presidential nominee. She told ABC's Charlie Gibson she's ready for the job and answered a number of questions about foreign policy and domestic issues. We'll hear some of what she had to say during this hour, and we will welcome your reactions and questions. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, September the 12th, and we are happy to have with us Margaret Farrow. She's the former Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, a former state legislator, one of our regular guests on our Week in Review program, and a new member of the Palin Truth Squad, named by the McCain-Palin campaign to speak out on unfair or untrue statements made about the GOP vice presidential nominee. And Margaret Farrow joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So how do you think Sarah Palin did last night in the ABC interview?
I think she did. I think she did quite well. Certainly, everybody was anticipating, this first look at this type of live and up close interview on specific things. The one concern I have, perhaps a bit, is it wasn't, cameras rolling, cameras off. It was edit. So it was still an edited snapshot of things that were asked and things that were said. And that gives one a little pause as to the placement and as to the cutting of it. But I think on the whole, it was what everybody was waiting for, a good look at what her initial reaction would be to the type of questions that Charlie Gibson put to her. And I think she did quite well.
Do you think she allayed fears of some that maybe she's not ready to be commander-in-chief?
Oh, I think it did. Of course, I think she is such a quick study that if she doesn't know something specific right now, because it hasn't been on her watch for the time she has been in the two other executive offices of mayor and governor, she isn't going to take very long at all to get up to speed on it. And I think we saw some of that last night, clearly represented in the way she did have a handle on maybe not everything to the finest degree, but had a very good sounding and basis in what she was really discussing with Charlie for most points.
Well, let me play an excerpt of perhaps an example where she wasn't completely up to speed. This is when Charlie Gibson was asking her about the Bush Doctrine.
Do you agree with the Bush Doctrine?
In what respect, Charlie?
The Bush, what do you interpret it to be?
His worldview?
No, the Bush Doctrine, enunciated September 2002, before the Iraq War.
I believe that what President Bush has attempted to do is rid this world of Islamic extremism, terrorists who are hell-bent on destroying our nation. There have been blunders along the way, though. There have been mistakes made. And with new leadership, and that's the beauty of American elections, of course, and democracy, is with new leadership comes opportunity to do things better.
And some are pointing out that then Gibson had to go into an explanation a little further about what the Bush Doctrine was and ask her further, do we have a right to anticipatory self-defense? Margaret Farrow, did you think she made, I didn't know if you were going to play that. I'm sorry.
I thought you were going to go into that because I know there was another good exchange, quite a lengthy exchange about it. You're right. No, I guess what my concern would be is, first of all, in 2002, when he did announce that, she was very much a mayor and very much focused on her own responsibility at that time. I don't think the Bush Doctrine in the normal day-to-day press is referred to in that way. Maybe history will use it more and more as President Bush leaves office now in terms of trying to wrap their hands around how he's been motivated. So I think she certainly, if he had gone to, the individual issues that arise as a result of the doctrine, I think she would have been prepared to specifically speak to those. But I guess I can understand why she didn't have the definition right on the tip of her tongue for the for something that was really announced 5 years ago and hasn't been defined. It's more been defined, I think, in action than in definition in the years since then.
Margaret Farrow, do you have any concerns of the interview coverage? I know that, you watch how these issues are being treated in the media and on the campaign trail. Anything unfair regarding the coverage of Sarah Palin's first major interview?
No, as I say, I think it was a very professionally done one. I think Charles Gibson has a very good reputation in the general regular news, in the network news area, and I think that's why he was why this all happened on his watch, quite frankly. And I thought in that regard it was very, you know, it was what one would have expected. As I say, the only concern I have perhaps a bit is some of the editing perhaps, or the placement of the questions. But I think for the most part, she was treated as anyone would be treated in this case. And I think, you know, that's something to be, you know, to be grateful for, because that hasn't been the case in the last two and a half, well, just about 2 weeks now.
Yeah. We're going to check weather and then go to calls. But tell us why you say that hasn't been the case for the last couple of weeks.
Well, I think there have been some issues raised and some questions raised and some comments made that would not have been made if Sarah was not a young, attractive woman who is conservative and very much a family person. I think there have been some issues raised about her personal decisions and personal life and family life that I think we certainly hear the other candidates saying are off bounds. But while they say they're off bounds, others within their camp are certainly you know, using them to the full extent. And I think there's been, I think that's why this group across the country, the group of women that I'm part of now, has been formed, so that we answer those things, and the campaign itself and the two candidates and the candidates on the other side can stay on the issues.
We will talk about those issues after we check weather. Margaret Farrow, our guest, a member of the Palin Truth Squad, former Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, also a former state legislator, talking with us about Sarah Palin's first major interview last night as vice presidential nominee, and talking about whether the media are giving Sarah Palin a fair shake. 1-800-642-1234. What do you think? Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon after 4 o'clock, it's Your Views on the News. Host Ben Marins invites you to call in with your thoughts about this week's most significant news story. That's coming up after 4 o'clock. We will review all the political news of the week coming up in our Week in Review after 8. Right now, we're talking about one of the week's biggest news stories. That was Sarah Palin's first interview last night, one-on-one with ABC's Charlie Gibson. Her first since becoming the vice presidential nominee for the GOP. We're talking about that interview and other recent issues involving Sarah Palin and the media during this hour with Margaret Farrow, who is a member of the Palin Truth Squad. And John in Delafield joins us first. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I guess more of a comment. I was just kind of deconstructing the first exchange that was used to open the show this morning, with the interview between Mr. Gibson and Ms. Palin. And if you think about it, what he did is he said, what do you think of, or do you agree with the Bush Doctrine? She asked for clarification what he meant by that. He said, well, what does it mean to you? She said, well, blunders have been made, but basically it's been characterized by, you know, remaining on offense against extremist Islamist terrorism. So, to me, the question, which began in a vague sense, was answered in an exemplary way, and yet it was sort of characterized as a stumble. So, my question is there some, it seems to me like we have sort of a gotcha analysis with a very low threshold, and I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, John? Why don't you hold on?
Well,
I guess he's not going to hold on. Margaret Farrell, the reason I played that was so I could get your take on it.
Well, I think John makes a good point, though. I think that, you know, as far as a classroom-type answer to a professor asking a question, you know, give me the definition of, she did get very specific as to really the outcome or the effort that was being put forth by the President Bush in defending our country, which became and is defined as the Bush Doctrine. I think there is some gotcha-type mentality in this whole thing. Everybody, why were we all waiting? Why was the world breathless waiting to see what she would do, to see if there was a gotcha moment in it? And perhaps this is the one that there was another one that you probably will get into later that they thought was going to be a gotcha moment, and I think she redefined it clearly. And that was the one about her speaking in a church, and we'll talk about that later, I assume. But I thought this one, I certainly defer to John. I think he defined it quite well in the way she certainly did answer it, and perhaps is not as much a fumble as a much more practical answer to the question.
Yeah, but Margaret Farrow, you've been in politics a long time. Those types of gotcha moments are commonplace, aren't they? If we don't really know a candidate, the questions are asked to make sure the candidate knows his or her stuff.
I think that's true. I think we ask questions. I mean, if someone's applying for a job, you have a series of questions you ask that individual to see if they seem in every way and appear to be qualified to do the job, and that certainly is part of this, and we will continue to see that. There are questions that she has been asked about her executive experience that couldn't be asked of any of the other candidates because none of them have had executive experience. And so I think it's to her credit that she is almost in a different group of questions because of the background and the experience she brings to this, and I respect her for that.
Yeah. A lot of people were anticipating this interview because we want to know who Sarah Palin is. And some were saying that she really was being protected and not doing these interviews with the media. She was making her speeches on the campaign stump, but not necessarily doing these types of interviews. You don't think that's true?
No, I think what happened, if we think of the whirlwind that happened, there was certainly a selection process for a candidate on both sides of the tickets, on both tickets. That was a whirlwind of activity. Both candidates, presidential candidates, were very busy leading up to their individual or respective conventions. And there was an awful lot of attention being given by others and then finally focusing in and finally making a decision. And I think during that time, I don't think, quite frankly, Governor Palin would have said, I better start doing my homework because I may be the candidate. She was, meanwhile, being governor and leading her life in Alaska and reacting to any inquiries that were made by the McCain campaign about it. And then to have suddenly come down into the lower 48 and get on to the rapid pace of activities she had, I think they wanted to make sure she had time to catch her breath, had time to talk to people about policy issues, and time to do some very strong, and I understand very hardworking, initial homework so that she didn't come out and exhibit a lack of ability to handle these questions. Instead, I think she exhibited a strong intelligence and a good memory and a good judgment ability that is giving her the ability to confront them now.
Mark in McHenry, Illinois is with us now. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. I didn't see the entire interview last night, and I'm not terribly concerned about Bridges to Nowhere or some of this other nonsense. I do understand that at some point, I heard an analyst say that Charlie Gibson had asked her about the issue of NATO and whether Georgia had been in NATO, if she thought we would have to go to war with Russia, and apparently the answer was in the affirmative. Now, my concern is that if a McCain administration, God forbid, pushes the same red flag in Russia's nose in trying to surround it with more and more members of NATO, then it is inevitable that at some point, since the first time since 1917, American and Russian troops will be shooting at each other. I suggest that a direct war with Russia would stay conventional for about a week, if that. And I think if this is the case, it might be a good time to start pricing fallout shelters again.
Well, Mark, let's play. I just have an excerpt. I can't play the whole thing given our time restraints, but here's an excerpt of that Q&A with Charlie Gibson.
Why, under the NATO treaty, wouldn't we then have to go to war if Russia went into Georgia?
Perhaps so. I mean, that is the agreement when you are a NATO ally, is if another country is attacked, you're going to be expected to be called upon and help.
So perhaps so was the answer to if Georgia was a part of NATO, would we be going to war, Margaret Farrell?
Well, I think, and I understand Mark's concern, I think she was given the premise if Georgia were a part of NATO, and then build from there with the what she made is a very conditioned response. Perhaps we would. She didn't say we were going to war. We'd have to help. We've already helped them with aid. We've already tried to do some very definite humanitarian things for them, and as it now exists. And I think she was showing again that we have to be good to our word as an ally and to help those who are having, the moves toward a democratic, free-determining, self-determining government. What I find interesting is this focus suddenly on her reaction to Georgia. She certainly knew what it means to be part of NATO. I would say she again let us remember she is running for vice president. Everyone can say John McCain 72. I remind you his mother is 96. John has good genes, apparently. There is no reason to rush to the idea that she is, you know, more than any closer to the presidency than a heartbeat away, as is, quite frankly, Joe Biden at this point. But my concern would be that the candidate, Senator Obama, had to take three steps to get an answer about Georgia that was a true answer, because his middle step, for example, was, well, let's put it into the Security Council, forgetting that at that time Russia, as we all know since it has begun, Russia has a veto vote, one of the veto votes, one member can veto action in the Security Council, and then he had to take a third try at it to finally get an answer that stuck. So I guess she at least knew what it meant to be a member of NATO and what we do for our fellow members, or what we might be asked to do, where it took a while for Senator Obama to come up with an answer about the Georgia thing that made some sense.
But some do say that Palin's answer didn't say, well, you know, we could, have sanctions or diplomacy. It was perhaps we would go to war rather than looking at those other areas
first. I think she was answering the question,
right.
would we step in to defend them? And what would we, you know, as a member of NATO? One would think that... that when she said perhaps we would, the perhaps would come after other steps, which normally any logical thinking government has done and we've done as a nation.
June in Jefferson is with us. Hi, June, you're on the air.
Yes, I just would like to say my views on her family life that she says is so, that she portrays as, being so... towards the more conservative religious right. And I used to view focus on the family, which is a very conservative religious right radio.
Yeah, June, we're almost at a news break, and I need to get you as quickly as possible to, your point about Sarah Palin.
My point is that... their views, her views are very contradictory towards the religious right, which is that the mother more stays towards caring for her family, and it just seems very strange. I'm a Democrat today, and
you don't think a mother can be vice president?
I don't see her as vice president, and seeing her as president, to tell you the truth...
All right, I'm sorry. We have a news break, and then we'll continue. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Friday, September the 12th. We are talking about Sarah Palin's interview last night, her first major primetime one-on-one interview with the news media, since she became the vice presidential nominee for the Republican Party. Sarah Palin sat down with Charlie Gibson. We're playing some excerpts from that interview and also talking about other unfair or charges that have been in the media over the past couple of weeks or so with a guest who is a member of the Sarah Palin Truth Squad. Margaret Farrow, our guest, former Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, former state legislator. Our number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Margaret Farrow, we had a caller on just before our news time, June, who was saying that she had a problem with Sarah Palin because Sarah Palin's conservative family values are contradictory to her lifestyle, in essence saying that she should, I guess, be taking care of her kids and in the kitchen, not running for vice president.
Well, as I understand it, she was quoting from one of the specific areas of the religious group. I find that interesting. It's always called the religious right. There is perhaps a group that says mom should stay home. I would say, for the most part, the religions and the people, those of us on the conservative side of politics, certainly think that the family is very important. But in the case of a parenting combination of a mother and dad, I think people ought to look to the combination and how effective it is. I guess I would ask June, does she think I should not have been a village trustee, village president, state assembly, state senator, or lieutenant governor, having five boys? John and I have five sons. We have a wonderful co-parenting relationship that is very satisfactory. They're all raised, they're all married, they all have families, and they're all living in Wisconsin. I don't think any of them would have said, gee, mom, you should have stayed home. I think to make that kind of a personal, we never hear a man being asked, you know, how can you handle family and your job? There's a combination of responsibility, especially when you have the true benefit of a two-parent family. And it's between the parents and the family to make the decision of who carries what responsibility at what time. To me, a mother of five tells you she can manage an awful lot of things at once. And she's doing it, and it is nobody else's business, quite frankly. I didn't hear anybody, when we just now have heard, after over 30 years of service, that U.S. Senator Joe Biden stood at his little young son's, preschool-age son's, bedsides in the hospital after their very tragic auto accident where they lost their mother and sister, that he stood there to be sworn in as a U.S. senator, as the only parent with these little boys. Did anybody ask Joe at that time, or did we even know that was the case? Until now, it was shown as a wonderful thing he did in nurturing them when he was suddenly thrust on the national scene with his nomination as vice president. But I didn't hear anyone ask him that.
No, and certainly they didn't, and this whole questioning makes me a little uncomfortable as a woman too. However, Joe Biden isn't subscribing to the beliefs of focus on the family,
right.
Mm-hmm. Let me share this email. Jeff in Glendale, why does Sarah Palin need a truth squad? She's a politician with a record and is running for one of the most important political positions in the world. So why a truth squad, Margaret Farrow?
Well, I think, again, we're talking about a very compressed time that suddenly things were having to be grasped. You know, the news media went into a total frenzy, and I'm not saying that, totally pejoratively. They had to suddenly get up to speed on who she was. So plane loads flew up to Alaska and everything else. Some of the things that were being initially said and brought out were not true, were partial truths that became distorted, and there was no reason for her at that time or for the McCain ticket at that time to have to be addressing those things day by day. They much more were ready to put their feet right into the path of running on the platform, running on issues, and that's what the group of us that were asked to come together across the country and be the voice to kind of deal with these other the sidebar issues so that they could stay focused. It's kind of a result of the press wanting to know everything at once and not quite getting everything right. And again, the fact that she was a woman seems, a conservative woman seems to have raised a whole level of issues that aren't raised about men, and the one being the one we just were talking about.
Yeah. Well, what other sidebar issues were out there that needed to be addressed?
Well, I think we've had this, you know, was she in a beauty pageant? Where did she go to school? We've had all sorts of things that were very definitely focused on her and what she does, both as a woman and now as a candidate. And yet, looking at her track record, her service as a governor, as a mayor, she headed a city about the same size I did when I was village president. Hers is a little larger. When you're at the desk where the buck stops, when you're at the last one to make the decision, that's a whole different level of understanding than a legislator. And I've been in both, I've had both in my feet in both paths, and I know the difference. I think that, I think there's just a lot that we don't want them dealing with that are more or less the extra issues.
Judy in Reedstown, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, I sort of am interested in those issues. I was going to, I'm basing this on the beginning of the interview, and it sounded like this was more of an excuse squad than a truth squad. And I guess what concerns me is that a lot of the stuff that's used to justify Mrs. Palin is she's a quick study. Instead of some more deeper discussion of her achievements to demonstrate really what she's done, what's the matter with knowing where she went to school? What can we discuss her record in Alaska on the economy, taxes, conservation, health care? What are her skills rather than these razzle-dazzle phrases of quick study? I'd like to know more of her achievements. I think you've done a very good job of explaining her, but there's nothing wrong with asking about how really skilled in the mechanics of being vice president, president, governor she is.
Yeah. These questions, there's nothing wrong with all these questions being asked. Margaret Farrow, we don't have time to go into the answer of all those biographical mm-hmm. questions posed by Judy, but what's your response? There's really nothing wrong. We need to know these things.
Right, absolutely. And I think her record, certainly as mayor and as governor, is out there to be compared with any of the others. There's a University of North Carolina has a professor in political science who does an index, an institutional index that he's been doing for some time, comparing the powers of different of legislative branches across the country and governors. He finds that Alaska's governor is in the fourth from the highest in terms of the ranking of the power that rests in that governor's chair. And it's a very interesting objective way he does that. She really had, as governor, and has as governor of Alaska, more power than, say, the governor of California and what that office can do. Her budget and her power really is much stronger than, for example, Bill Clinton's when he was our governor of Arkansas. His budget was only $2 billion. His level of power within that office was much lower than the level of power and responsibility of the Alaskan governor. She has a record of cutting taxes. She has a record of getting a natural pipeline through that had been worked on for decades, and she got it through in her first year in office as governor and is hailed for it. I mean, just look at the people in Alaska and their opinion of her if you want to know if she has a record of accomplishments. Yeah. And she has a very strong, over 80% favorable rating. And I don't know when we've had a governor down in this area, and certainly in our state, that's had an 80% approval rating.
Judy said something I'd like just a quick reaction to. She said, this sounds more like an excuse squad than a truth squad. Your reaction to that?
Well, I don't think I've been giving any excuses. If it's been seen as that way, I would wonder what it was that I said that made people think it was an excuse. I think what we've been trying to say is that this candidate wants to be treated like any other candidate, no matter how she gets dressed in the morning. And some of the things that have been said about her are definitely more of a problem that we even heard Hillary Clinton complaining about when she was. She felt being treated unfairly by the press in the fact that she was the woman candidate on the other side. So I think we're just trying to clear the air and keep her from having to do it or react to some of the things that were said.
One of John McCain's top campaign managers said something along the lines that Sarah Palin would do media interviews when the media were sufficiently deferential to her. Is it really the media's job to be deferential to a vice presidential candidate?
Well, I guess, first of all, I don't know where or when he said that. I had not heard that comment. I think what he wanted to be sure is that both she was going to be comfortable and they would say, this is one of four national candidates right now, and there isn't too much difference in terms of what we should be asking her. And I think we're settling into that. I think the most amazing thing about this whole campaign, quite frankly, is that yesterday, for example, the Charlie Gibson news show, an interview completely overshadowed what was another interview on the cable channel with each candidate sitting again with questioners on a stage in front of a live audience with some very thoughtful questions, a very quiet, you know, exchange of opinions. And yet that isn't the news today. It's the Charlie Gibson show because of Governor Palin. And I think that what this has done is brought a whole new level of interest. And it's whoever wants to write about this campaign is going to have a lot to write about in the history.
We'll talk a little bit about that forum on national service in our Week in Review coming up in our next hour. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 11 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Friday, September the 12th. We will welcome in two guests from different political perspectives to talk with you about the news of the week. It's the Week in Review coming up after 8 o'clock. We are talking with a guest who sometimes appears with us on the Week in Review, Margaret Farrow, former Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, a former state legislator, a member of the Palin Truth Squad, talking about Vice Presidential candidate Sarah Palin and her appearance last night in her first big interview since becoming nominee, also talking about whether the media are giving Sarah Palin a fair shake. The Truth Squad, Palin Truth Squad, appointed by the McCain-Palin campaign to speak out on unfair or untrue statements made about the GOP vice presidential nominee. Our next caller is Keisha in Sussex. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I guess the only statement that I wanted to make really quick this morning before I came to work is that I think Sarah Palin being a woman is a non-factor. When you look at the things that happened to Hillary Clinton during her run, it's basically the same thing, but I think it's more of an insult to women and to feminists everywhere that John McCain would pick her, not so much as her experience, but more so the fact that she is a woman that Barack Obama didn't pick Hillary as his running mate, and not so so much on her actual views. I think as we get to learn more about Sarah Palin and who she is and what she stands for, the differences between her and Hillary couldn't be no more different than night and day. They are completely two different candidates. Hillary ran on her own platform while Sarah Palin was selected. And I think that where she stands on abortion and the environment and other major issues that are confronting Americans today is very different than what we were actually looking for in a candidate for vice president. And this shows where John McCain is at as far as his candidacy for president.
Well, your reaction to that, Margaret Farrell?
Well, I don't in any way compare Hillary Clinton and Sarah Palin. The only thing they share is that they are women. They are women, you know, and the way people view them. I would agree with the caller that they are night and day apart on a lot of the issues that are important not only to women but to people in general. And certainly, since I am I am a pro-life woman, I can say, yeah, this is different. Sarah has a different opinion on this than Hillary Clinton does. In my case, I disagree with Hillary Clinton. And so that's exactly what makes politics interesting, that there are opinions on different issues, and we shouldn't think all. I think what I really applaud the caller for doing is saying all women aren't the same. Just because we are women doesn't mean we think the same. We bring the same interest level, the same ability level to the table in the legislature. For example, my experience was no two women were alike and shared the exact same views on anything. And some of us were much more interested in one set of issues and another were in another. So I agree with her. They're very different, and it would have been interesting perhaps if the two women would have been on the ticket or running against each other.
Let me ask you about the statement that was released by the McCain campaign before the Republican National Convention. That was the Palins announcing that their daughter was indeed pregnant. And then the media reports on this, and all of a sudden all sorts of attacks that the media is attacking the Palins, or the media are attacking this teenage daughter. Wasn't it the media's responsibility to, I mean, talk about a major announcement like that issued by the McCain campaign?
Well, I guess my is to my understanding, and mm-hmm. I do not, even though I am serving in some quasi capacity for with the campaign now, I don't have everybody's information at my fingertips. But my recollection is that the press, some aspects of the press.
Yeah, the liberal blogs had rumors on them.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The blogs and some of the yellow journalism type, the headline type papers were saying that Sarah Palin did not have their youngest child, that child was the child of the daughter. And that was out for at least a day or several days. And it was at that point, as I understand it, that the Palin right. family wanted to, clarify that, no, she didn't have a child. She couldn't have had a child. She's pregnant right now. And unfortunately, that's a situation that we as a family are dealing with. But we are making it clear to clear one lie by giving a truth on the other hand. And then the example of does everyone, no matter how much they can say they are steeped in a belief of God or religious in nature, are we all able to make mistakes? Yes. And we are dealing with it as the family to say that a judgment call that was perhaps the wrong one for a 17-year-old at the time is going to come to a good end with the support we're giving her. I don't think they came out with the headlines about the pregnancy until there was a reason for clarifying a very ugly rumor that was being circulated prior to that.
Right. Anne in Minocqua, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Your guest has actually kind of reinforced my question that I had for you, being the kid glove handling of Sarah Palin and the accusations from the Republican Party that it's the media that's really picking on her and these inappropriate questions that they're asking. Sarah Palin, as your guest said just a few moments ago, I believe it was Judy who called and had asked, why shouldn't she be asked these questions? And your guest proceeded to say, well, she doesn't want to be treated any different than any other candidate, and yet in another sentence later on, she said she compared herself to Hillary Clinton, and Hillary Clinton felt she was asked inappropriate questions as well. We cannot get beyond the fact that Sarah Palin is a woman, and as a woman, we obviously cannot argue we're different than a man. And why does this truth squad, as you call it, not want us to get the truth in a person who we Americans may have to put all of our trust in above the vice presidency? And why should we not inquire and find out the truth? And why should we be shortchanged on our intelligence to make the judgment of an appropriate question and the answer given by the candidate? And then lastly,
we're almost out of time, Anne. So what is the most important point you want Margaret Farrow to address?
Well, I guess, the question to me is, why does she want to overly protect her and not let us make our own judgment based on the questions the media ask, and why do we not have the right to know that? And
yeah, all right.
Oh, okay. I understand, Anne, where Anne's coming from. I guess I would say the same thing, perhaps in some injustice of Hillary Clinton. My point is, women should be asked the same question as men. Men should be asked the same question as women. There should not be issues of, say, family raised about Hillary Clinton or about Sarah Palin that are not raised of Obama or Biden. There is why aren't we on issues of importance that they have to take on as responsibility for the two offices each of the four people are looking at? So that we are saying, let's get this cloud away that is just looking at all of her very personal decisions as a wife and mother, that we don't ask of other male candidates as a husband and father. And that I think Sarah is ready to speak her own mind and speak for herself at every opportunity if the other questions get out of the way and we get to those things.
We have very little time, but Barack Obama said that the McCain campaign was making hay with his lipstick on a pig comment this week because the McCain campaign didn't want to really talk about the issues or the record of McCain-Palin. Do you really think that Barack Obama was making a derogatory remark about Sarah Palin?
Well, I think Senator Biden is known over his long history as being every now and then getting off message by getting kind of ad lib a bit and can say things that maybe he would take back at a later date, and he makes a joke of it very, characteristically, and that's human nature. I don't think that Senator Obama has a throwaway line very often. I think he thinks very carefully what he says. The concern is that Sarah Palin certainly is identified by her own use of it, of lipstick. I have heard at one of the rallies, women literally were holding their tubes of lipstick up as a show of, we know who you are and what you are, and there was kind of good humor about it. In this time and day of political correctness, where everybody is very careful about the terms they use, the way they address each other, the way they speak of each other, I think to say what he said was definitely a misstep, and it was very unusual if it was just a blurted-out misstep, because Senator Obama doesn't often let things like that slip out. And so I have real concern, because I think he would want everyone else to be very concerned about any ethnic comment that is made, any other type of comment, and people are, for the most part.
Yeah.
So I have great concern about that, but I think we're seeing a tightening of that, and that's a good thing.
And I hope you'll come back. We didn't get to as many things as we needed to. Margaret Farrell, thank you very much for being with us.
Surely, thank you.
Margaret Farrell, former Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, a member of the Palin Truth Squad. Thanks to Rob Ferret, Bill Martins, and Cynthia Schuster for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.